from down under.
Do or do not. There is no try.
G'day, mate. How you going?
Well, g'day, mate. How you going? This is Adam O'Brien, the Fanta from Down Under, coming to you live from Quinlan's Cantina on the Gold Coast of Australia. And I hope you've had a fantastic week and enjoying a little bit of Star Wars somewhere in your neck of the woods. That's right. Now, down here in Australia, we've been enjoying some torrential weather. That's right. If anything, it felt like some of those huge winds we get on Hoth. That's right. Keeps everyone battening down the hatches. That's right, staying home. And for me, well, I've been catching up on a little bit of reading, a little bit of watching the films themselves, and also catching up with some dear friends talking a little Star Wars. And we've got a little bit of that for you tonight with our dear friend, Eric, all the way from Boston and Massachusetts, to chat a little bit of Star Wars and just what he's enjoying about the fandom itself right now. And of course, he is really into reading and, of course, writing about Star Wars as well. So we're going to talk to him a little bit about that very, very soon. But here is how you can get into contact with Fanta Tracks and, of course, the Fanta from Down Under. G'day, how you going? This is how you can catch me on the web. That's right, your host, Adam O'Brien, the Fanta from Down Under. You can catch it OB Pop Culture on both Twitter and Instagram. You can also catch me on the one, the only, Fandom Podcast Network's Lethal Mullet Podcast. But check out Fanta Tracks itself. Check it out at fantatracks.com. All your Star Wars news in one single file. All right, folks, welcome to the Fanta from Down Under. Come to you from Quinlan's Cantina on the Gold Coast of Australia. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien, and joining me all the way on the other side of the globe, that's right, on the other side of the pond of the water, on Boston, Massachusetts, in the United States of A, that's right, of America, is the one, the only, let's say one of the most talented writers out there, somebody who you've seen the blogs of on Coffee with Kenobi, you name it, all these fantastic, RetroZap now as well, the one, the only, drumroll, Eric Onkenhout, mate, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm really good. Really, really good. Mate, we've been talking off air just quickly about our loves of writing in the Star Wars universe. These amazing stories, because in the end of the day, it is a storytelling universe. And we were talking about the character of Nomi Sunrider, weren't we?
Of all characters.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I love the Tales of the Jedi series from the 90s. That was like when I was like 18, 19, that was my thing. I wanted to know everything there was about the Jedi and the Sith. And those first like six issues of that comic series, I was like, I need to know everything there was about this person, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bummer because they didn't make that that series we were talking about, about Nomi Sunrider, but... but I remember at the same time, the Dark Empire series, you read that one?
Yes, correct.
Right. And there was another Vima, what was her name? Deboda,
yeah.
This ancient Jedi woman
that
was supposed to, I think she was a relative or related to Nomi Sunrider. And I was like, so stoked about all this, history.
Yeah, the lore. Yeah, it was brilliant, wasn't it? Yeah. I mean, like, first thing that got me about the Tales series was, I mean, I'm a massive fan of two fantasy series. Tolkien's world, obviously, of Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, and the ancient parts of that too. So the whole world that he built up in Middle-earth. But I also like Robert E. Howard's Conan series as well, and Red Sonja, all that sort of stuff, which I really think it was that world of fantasy mixed with not a post-apocalyptic future, but an even more used universe of future Star Wars, like mashed. And to be honest, I think they did it a lot better than the Old Republic, which still is great, but it seems too new.
What do you mean? Like, what seems too new? What they're doing now?
Or? In the games I'm talking about. The technology just doesn't, it seems a little bit too futuristic, even for that time.
Oh, yeah. I know it's hard because, you know, it's It's supposed to be a galaxy far, far away a long time ago, but I don't know. It's hard to do, I guess. But I remember in that series, they would have like ships that look like sailing ships, but they were spaceships.
Yeah, I'm like,
that's weird.
Even the Master Arca's ship that's Yulikel Drummer, Kekel Drummer's master, that ship kind of, the way it was designed and even with the sort of stabilizers almost looked like sails. I mean, it really had that almost a pioneer's frigate or, cruiser that would be sailing all these new frontiers. And I think there was something about that they just basically, it was still had the, I don't know, the sort of used future look of a Millennium Falcon still.
It's almost like they wanted to take like a lot of the old sailing ships when, you know, people from Europe were starting to like explore towards like America and South America, and they had all these pirate sailing ships. And at the same time, during that time of the Star Wars Legends, now that it's Legends, but they're exploring the galaxy, and they're almost using the same vessels that were really used on Earth, but they're in space.
That's right. I loved the lore of that, and to me, Sunrider was the strongest of the characters. I mean, and we've got a real mix of a great cast of characters there. You've got Master Arca, who's this mysterious leader. You've got, obviously, Ulick, who falls to the dark side. But then you've got the Mandalorians behind all of this as well, which is just, you know, again, we see how that all started. And, of course, their battles with the Jedi in that Legends universe. I think the mythology of the time and the action, the intrigue, the mystery, and just worry, is Ulick going to make it? Is he going to be redeemed? That was the thing I loved about it.
And I also liked, like, when you talk about Master Arca, that's the guy with the white hair and he had the red eyes or something.
Yeah.
And wasn't there like another beast that walked around on all fours and he ended up, they thought he was just an animal, but he ended up being a Jedi too?
That's right. Correct. Yeah.
I forget his name. It was similar to Arca, I think, though.
Mm.
And they were just not afraid to go anywhere. I mean, they basically had characters that looked like trees. that were Jedi Knights.
Yeah.
You know? Or like, I don't know, just the strangest things, you know? And I remember back then looking at like the covers of some of the issues and they looked very Egyptian.
Mm. Oh, yes.
It, which made sense to me because the time period was 5,000 years before the Battle of Yavin. And to us, like, that would be like the Egyptian times or whatever. So
It makes a lot of sense to sort of relate imagery wise, you know, ancient cultures and stuff like that to us, because again, that's what George did with the original film. We knew by the looks of things straight away where things were, where it was the speed is looking like cars, or the outfits of the farmers looking like farmers in relative universe of ours, you know, like it was the idea to physically straight away you can tell where things are, so you get moving with the story, because the story just had so much information. It was information overload. Had you done that before 1977, I don't think people could take it.
Yeah, there were so many characters in that series. The art, too. I love the art.
Oh, yeah.
And I think the guy's last name, I think it was Gossett.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Gossett or something. But, I mean, just that was, like, really fantastic stuff.
I'm going
to have to go back and read that now.
I've got to say, you brought up Dark Empire before. Now, the story may not be my favorite, but the art is the best, I personally think, that was done with a Dark Horse. It was definitely the first ad I saw before they got picked up, when they finally said, look, we're going to complete this story that was going to be told with the Marvel line. Here it is. Here's a few cells. And it was a picture of Chewbacca with those beautiful washes that he was doing. It was an ink wash, but it was all in one color and just the shades and the tints of it. So if it was light coming off like the console of the Falcon and it was red, it would have all the tints over the... And the beautiful wash that was done, it was just absolutely glorious artwork. So it was the vibrancy of the color and accuracy of the art.
In the Dark Empire comics.
Correct, yeah.
That was all watercolor, I think, right?
Yeah, correct. Yeah. Just beautiful.
What was it? Dave Dorman did the art?
No, I think it was... I can't remember.
Did he do the cover art?
I think he did the cover art.
Okay.
I think it was Tom Veitch and Cam Kennedy that did that one. That series?
That's right. Yeah. That makes sense.
But the artwork itself was what dragged me into it, because at the time I wasn't into... I had the dark times of Star Wars, and I was into Masters of the Universe and Mask and Thundercats. And I even got the Silver Hawks at one stage, which was Thundercats in space. You know, like, we got right into that stuff.
Nice.
So there's all these different things that pulled us away, and there was even a really... I think it ran for about 3 episodes out here before they pulled it, called Tiger Sharks, which was another one. So I was right into the cartoony world at that time before, boom, the 90s hit with Star Wars on Dark Horse, and I was like, yeah, that's it, I'm back.
Yeah. I remember when I first saw that series, I had no idea it was even out. I just happened to bump into it at the comic store, and I'm like, what the heck is this, you know? And I read that it took place 5 years or 6 years after Jedi or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wow, new Star Wars stuff. I'm going to have to get this. But the first issue I bought was issue 2, and it wasn't a regular comic book. It was like the UK version.
Yeah.
So it was much bigger, and it was like newspaper print. And I think I still have it. But I honestly wasn't a big fan of that kind of format.
The jumbo size, so, they call it, yeah.
Yeah.
Here's an interesting story. It relates to Battlestar Galactica, but the same size. My folks were in, where is that battlefield? They were in the middle of the United States. It was Civil War. Oh, Gettysburg, they were.
Gettysburg, yeah.
And they're in the middle of town, and there's some type of news agency or comic store there. They were flipping through books there, and they, oh, wow, look at this. Adam loves Battlestar Galactica. And they picked up a big newsprint, a UK jumbo size of the Battlestar Annual. And it had all the comic stuff all the way through it. And I think they were selling it for about $2 or whatever it was in the States. Didn't know what they had, because the thing's worth quite a mint. Like, it's worth quite a bit. And they came back over, and they said, you like a polo and Starbucks and all that, don't you, mate? And I went, yeah, it's all good. And looking through, I'm going, wow, the jumbo UK edition. No wonder the guys in the US had no idea what they had their hands on. And, you know, that's worth a couple hundred dollars, whatever, now.
Wow.
Because they just don't have them.
Yeah.
And of course, we had those in both the, like, all the comics, basically. So if you had DC Comics, Batman, that would come up in a big newspaper style edition, jumbo ones. You could use as posters as well and put on your walls.
Yeah.
And we got the, you know, all the Star Wars comics like that as well. It's brilliant.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I used to get like Star Wars magazines in the mail. I'd take out, yeah, like both their foldouts, and I would take them out, hang them up on my wall and stuff. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Good times.
They're just brilliant. So obviously we brought up with this great line of the, you know, characters and stuff like that. And I think it's great because a lot of the creators now are people in our age group who have grown up with it. And we're starting to see some of that in some of these great projects. I think the most exciting one for me out of the newer ones, not so much the ones tied to the films, is The Mandalorian. I think this is going to be heading right up to those fantastic stories.
I can't wait. I'm so psyched because I'm actually more excited about this than episode 9.
Same here.
Only because it's a TV series. We've never had live action Star Wars TV series before.
That's right.
So I just can't wait. I can't wait for them to announce exactly when it's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
So I can set the date.
Oh yeah. And Pedro is going to be great. Pedro Pascal's just a brilliant actor. But I think they need a heavy bad guy in this. They need somebody like Christoph Waltz to walk in there and do his routine. Hi, I am a stormtrooper here to go and check out what's happening here. When you're a stormtrooper, you wear blaster armor. We're going to use it now. That's just how he does those. He explains every scene down to the last second. And I think Pedro is just going to go, pew! You know, pew, pew, and just take him out straight away. Too much talking.
He's awesome. I just watched him in a Netflix series called Narcos.
Yeah. Oh, and, yeah. He played the lead, so good. Didn't he? Yeah, yeah. He was great in that.
Yeah. You watched that series?
I have. Yeah, yeah. He's, oh, look, I think he's a fantastic actor. I think I first saw him in Game of Thrones. And then,
seen him there too, yeah.
What else did I see him in? He's in Great Wall with Mark Wahlberg. Oh, not Mark Wahlberg. Matt Damon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The other guy from Boston.
Yeah. But you look at what he was in that, what do they call it? I'm trying to think of that. Kingsman, the sequel. He played one of the, I think, the U.S. agents in that one. And he was very good.
Oh, all right. Yeah. There's just some guys, like, you know, some actors, you just put them in whatever role and they just become that character. It's amazing.
I know. The thing is, Star Wars having to compete with one of the biggest, hugest casts ever assembled. And it's on Denis Villeneuve's Dune. That's coming very soon. This cast just keeps growing and growing. And they've just got Javier Bardem to play pretty much the Obi-Wan Kenobi role of Stilgar. You know, he's the mentor to Paul Atreides. So it's interesting. Like, I kind of said that Disney and Lucasfilm do a great job casting. They always do. But
yeah.
I'd be a little concerned. Dune's racking up some massive stars. Huge.
Yeah. So would you say you're concerned?
I'm concerned that, not concerned. I would just say some competition's on the way.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And with Denny doing 2049, nobody said they could do a Blade Runner sequel and do it well. And that was a very good film.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. But yeah, I don't know anything about Dune, and I can't wait to see this movie.
Mm. I think it's going to really open up to the general audience. Dune's a hard read sometimes for the general public. It's those that aren't into science fiction. You know, it is such a world to absorb. But I think once you get into the book itself, it's you can see where George was influenced.
Oh yeah, I have a friend at work that keeps telling me how like Star Wars stole from Dune. I'm like, get out of here. But he keeps telling me, you got to read that book. You got to read it. I'm like, I will.
There is a lot. I mean, you look at Tatooine at the start of A New Hope and you see that skeleton on the ridges. I mean, that's an ode to a sandworm straight away.
All that talk about spice, you know, in Star Wars, like the spice mines and all that stuff. Yeah, tells me they stole that from Dune.
Yeah, like, a lot more.
Like, they all have their influences.
Oh, they do. I mean, and look, you only got to look at movies like The Matrix or, you know, even, even the Fast and Furious franchise, where they're coming from older films or older stories and stuff like that. And it's all the influence of the writers themselves moving into where we're going now. But I mean, obviously, Mandalorian is such an interesting idea to focus on Mandalore itself, which I've always thought was prime for storytelling.
So, I thought I heard something that somebody said, and it was official, I think, that even though it's called the Mandalorian, he's not actually from Mandalore.
Ah.
I don't know. Yeah, I thought I heard that. It was kind of like how Jango and Boba Fett were Mandalorians, but they wore the armor. So I'm thinking he's not from Mandalore. He's not like, you know, from the Clone Wars Mandalore. So I don't know. I wish I knew more about the show, like what it's going to be about, what the premise is. I'm dying. They don't tell you anything.
Well, same. And I'm somebody that hasn't even gone into the rumors of this one. I'm first person into spoilers usually, but I'm wanting to be surprised this time, you know, and I've deliberately stayed clear of anything that's not official on Mandalorian because I really want to be wowed. And I think, you know, Star Wars is episodic by nature. So to be on TV as a literal TV soap is going to be interesting.
Yeah, totally. I mean, we've never had it before. So, and I'm wondering too if they're going to release all the episodes at once or is it going to be one a week?
I don't even think
that's been decided.
I think, you know, at the end of the day, to get their viewership up, they'll do it just like Star Trek Discovery is doing currently, which is one episode a week, and then you can get the whole season later.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that. That way, it gives the fans a chance to talk about it with each other, like on Twitter. We can all yell at each other on Twitter about how
great this is. We can. And I think the thing is, too, and you can really dissect the plots and the characters and get into, you know, where's the story going? Star Wars, the best part of Star Wars is speculation of where things are going to go. It never ends up where we speculate to, but I think that's half the...
Never
does, you know? Like, no. I think one of the bigger theories of Episode 9 was that, what if Snoke was just a puppet and Palpatine's still alive and behind the scenes still to this day?
Yeah, I heard some rumor that Palpatine was going to be in Episode 9. I'm like, no. No way.
This is Kylo Ren's story.
I always tell myself, like, I don't really like to analyze or speculate too much, but when you get to talking about it, it's really hard not to do it, because you gotta wonder.
Oh yeah,
you know. And then and like you said, they come up with stories that we never even considered. And then I think to myself, oh, that's because we're not working for Lucasfilm.
Oh, 100%. I mean, really, they've got the hardest job in the world. I mean, it's one of the biggest fan bases out there, such a diverse fan base. It's hard to please everybody.
Yeah. You know what, though? I don't even think they try to please anybody. They just try to tell a good story.
Oh, 100%. So, yeah.
And I gotta hand it to them, like, not to, like, you know, try to do what the fans want you to do. That's a lot of pressure.
Of course it is.
You know, as long as they stick to something similar to what George would do along that line, I'm fine with it.
You know? You got to think about what's come in the last couple of years. We've had Rogue One, which we never thought we'd get something like that, which I think still probably the most polished of the new movies and most unexpected in the terms of story, that none of the heroes live. I mean, it's Star Wars' essence is about sacrifice. And sacrificing yourself for the betterment of others. And that's what the Jedi is about. The Jedi is about, if you want to become legend or become eternal or immortal, then you have to give up yourself. You have to sacrifice. You're still going to be alive, but you're going to be Casper the Friendly Ghost. You know, you basically become, one with everything. And I think that's something we're going to see with the dark side, possibly... In maybe not just Episode 9, but we've seen it in Rebels with Palpatine playing around with, you know, the fact that the cosmic force has no boundaries to time. So there could be another thing that, plays around there. They didn't just put that out there. That was there for a reason, you know, and I think that's there for future storytelling too.
I that's the one thing I've noticed since, you know, the Episode 7, they're telling a lot of strange stories. I don't think George would have ever have done, you know, with the... You know, the stuff in Rebels with, you know, Ahsoka and Ezra and Palpatine walking in space and Rey with the mirrors and the flashbacks and the force backs and all that stuff. I just kind of go along with it, but it's a little strange to me and I try to understand it, but I have no idea what's going on.
You gotta look back to what George was going to do, and he talked about it in an interview with James Cameron's Science Fiction last year.
I think I liked that.
He talked about, well, you know, they've gone the direction that they wanted to go with, you know, the things that Disney wanted to do. But he said, you know, maybe the general fandom wouldn't have liked what I was going to do, which was move Star Wars into the macrobiotic world.
Yeah. So, We talked about this last time. I remember.
Yeah. So, what are your thoughts now? You know where things are with obviously Last Jedi and Solo, and where things are heading in the future, possibilities. But had George done it, it could have been a, you know, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids or Honey, I Shrunk the Jedi.
Yeah, no kidding. But it kind of doesn't surprise me. Is after, I don't know if you've seen any of his student films, but they're pretty out there.
Oh yeah, so. definitely. I mean, you know, you only got to look at THX, which is, I mean, obviously not a student film, but he had a student film that was right alongside that, obviously THX as well. But some of the stuff in that is quite bizarre, particularly at the start of THX, where he's got like lizard-like or even I think the caterpillar-like creatures moving little circuitries and stuff like that in this little room. And you're kind of like, What's that got to do with anything?
I don't even remember that part.
You know, it was interesting. Like, there, you know, he had religious iconography in there too, with the consumers consuming blocks. It was the whole idea of just buying things. You know, he's got a lot to say there, but it was very abstract. And I think maybe he would have gone that route with the newer films. He always said, oh, I'm going to do something a little bit, you know, a little bit art based, a little bit different.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, I think that's where George would have gone. And it's a shame, because I really think George should have just left Star Wars and not done that maybe any further there, and maybe just worked with Ron Howard on some Willow sequels. I think that would have been fine.
Willow?
Oh, yeah, Willow. Yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Actually, my favorite of the new movies is Solo. I really like that movie
a lot.
That's
a beautiful movie. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I just watched it again for the first time in months the other day, and I'm like, oh man, this movie, I just have a smile for 2 hours, you know?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
such a fun movie.
Look, I just, it's perfect time, and the sort of, I mean, it's not quite a sequel, obviously, but to have Lando actually coming back in 9 as well is just, it's the best way to bring those two together. I mean, it's just...
Yeah,
just brilliant. Billy Dee, no matter where I see him, whether it's in an interview on TV, just exudes charm and coolness. You know, like he's just a cool character, no matter what he does. And I think, you know, just give him the canary yellow shirt again and the cape, and it's all on.
I think just he doesn't even have to speak. He just sits there with the sunglasses on and looks around.
Oh yeah,
you know, it's just cool. I don't know how he does it. I mean, want to learn.
He's just going to walk into a scene and have, you know, whether it's Finn, Poe, Ray, you know, whatever it is. How you doing, you old pirate? You know, he's going to get out there and get the whole thing.
So good to see you.
What are you doing on my ship? You know, like, I think whatever happens in this, he's going to be looking, hey, that's my ship. What's going on with my ship over here? You know, like, especially in Solo at the end, where it literally becomes the Falcon that we know, and he's just looking at the face that we get. You know, he's just like, you did that to my ship? Just brilliant.
If he says anything about L3 in episode 9, I'm going to lose my mind.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, but the thing is, L3 is the ship now. I mean, now we know, you know, I think that was, a lot of people didn't get that on first watch, I don't think. You know, like it's
really?
I think they thought, well, what's going on here? You know, like it's is it just the systems or the navigation systems have been downloaded? But no, it's her character, because you know we get that line from 3PO. He goes, I don't know where your ship got that sort of dialect or whatever it was, or computing or whatever it was, and then straight away you realize something's alive in there.
Most peculiar dialect.
Yeah. Brilliant, absolutely brilliant. I think that's maybe half the battle R2 had when he's plugging into the circuitry to try and figure things out. He's like, what the hell's going on here?
Can you imagine R2 and L3 in a conversation?
Oh my goodness. Well, we probably saw it on screen. He's like, you know, that whole thing. And I think that's half the battle when the Falcon came down to Bespin. Now we know when he had his people working on the ship. I've always thought this. Was he trying to download L3?
Oh, wow. Okay, I'm going to have to think about that one. That's the first time that's brought up.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that. So I think we need to put that out there to the Twitter world, because that's an interesting thing, you know? Is L3 still alive in there? Wouldn't he try and to download it to the city central computer?
Hmm. Yeah.
Because he wasn't exactly fond of Han after what the events of Solo.
Yeah. All right, so first of all, let's back up for a second. So I remember reading the Solo novelization.
Mm-hmm.
And it went a little bit deeper into when L3 kind of integrated itself into the Falcon. And it said that the Falcon welcomed L3 in with, like, basically open arms. And they just became friends and L3 just kind of like, okay. But, that blew my mind. I just lost my train of thought.
So what if she has become the city central computer? that we hear about, you know, because again, R2 has problems trying to get into the computer there.
Yeah. Wow. I can't believe nobody's brought this up until now.
Mate, that's crazy. Fancy from down under, mate. We do these things.
Yeah. It's just so great that they do something so simple like that, and it opens up so many possible storylines down the road.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like, I thought that was really brilliant when they did that. I'm like, oh, that's so cool.
That's right. Now, you've obviously got Woody Harrelson in that film. For me, was the ideal Lee Van Cleef-like character. I mean, he really was the lovable rogue, lovable gangster, but again, not quite the heart of gold.
No. You betrayed him at the end.
That's right.
But, I still thought that when Dryden said, oh, my associate, you know, he's going to come through the door or whatever, and I thought it was going to be Boba Fett.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I just had a feeling, but no, shows you how much I know.
Well, I mean, that could always easily come up in a sequel, you know, and I think that's the thing is, you know, Fett's one of those characters which, if you put him too much out there, you know, like I think, you know, you put too much of one character in one movie, especially one that should be mysterious, it can take away from the experience, you know.
Don't you think that's happening with Maul then?
I personally think so, yeah. I think Maul should be in and out, like should be, you know, a very, because that's what makes him so powerful and so sinister, is that he is so lethal. You want him in and out so quickly. But if we put him in every episode of Rebels, not so much.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was really skeptical at first when they first brought it back, but I think just the way they did it, for me, was good enough.
Oh, yeah.
So I was fine with it. But, yeah.
And, I mean, good with Sam. Sam did a great job with the voice.
Absolutely.
I mean, just, he exudes charm with it.
Have you, switching gears, have you watched Resistance?
That is one show I haven't been able to get out of here, to be honest. It just sheer fact that I can't seem to watch it out here, whether it's on the platforms that I have, streaming or vice versa. I haven't been able to watch it yet.
That stinks.
Which happened with Rebels as well, until they fixed that. They basically had a channel open here for Rebels. So now got all the Rebels stuff. So Australia is a little bit harder, like especially this and DC as well, with the new Doom Patrol and a few others. It takes a good six months before we see it.
How long? How long?
Six months.
Like, how long did you have to wait to get Rebels?
About 6 months.
Oh, wow.
And unfortunately, all of it's spoiled, you know, because it's everyone's talking about it online. Oh, yeah. So by the time we get to it, we pretty much know about it anyway. So that's, again, Australian distribution has no corner on these because at the end of the day, streaming's instant. So, you know, shows like, for example, Star Trek Discovery have broken through all that and been able to work on our Netflix platform. So that's basically where our new platform is for a lot of those, is Netflix Australia.
Yeah. That's a bummer.
Oh, yeah.
I think everybody should be able to watch it at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, it's that, and it's also probably the greed of distribution companies too. Like DVD and Blu-ray, for example, on a lot of items, we can't get here. There's some that just we will never see in Australia. And it's a sheer fact that, like John Wick, the last John Wick sequel, when that sequel came out, John Wick 2, we had to wait 8 months.
That's ridiculous.
Yep, 100%. I mean,
it's not like you're living in the middle of nowhere.
Well,
you know?
Well, it is Australia. It is down under. So it is a bit far away. But, yeah, I mean, there's, you know, like, I even think New Zealand gets stuff before us.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Wow, really?
Yeah, it's a true story. Yeah, but we've got companies now like Madman Entertainment who are trying to fight that and give us things early enough and give us even stuff we haven't seen. Literally, only recently I picked up a Gerry Anderson DVD, which had all of the all of the outtakes of a lot of his sci-fi stuff. So there was a series with Brian Blessed. You know, of course, he played a certain...
Boss Nass,
that's right, famous Gungan. And he is the... Basically, Star Trek equivalent would be Scotty on this little ship. going across doing all this cosmic stuff, this crazy stuff, and it was basically space 1999 style, you know. It was great. It goes, yeah, we have a, oh, it's a star. Like, he's doing the whole theatrical thing. We have to shut down the hyperdrive. Like this, you know, getting right into it, and it was fantastic. But again, it was, I think it was called The Day After Tomorrow, I think it was called. And again, a movie that was shown, but this one was like the director's cut version. Then there was Space, I think it was called Space Cops or something like that. And it was, again, another one, a little bit like Farscape, where it's got puppets and stuff like that, all this crazy stuff. And then it had an American police officer who was literally flying around in a little spacecraft, taking out all the crime and stuff like that. Righto, we got ourselves one over here. Look, it looks like Kermit the Frog. And you're, what have you been doing? I've been selling spice, man. You got some spice? And it was literally that. And it was crime-ridden gangsters, but it was all with puppets. It was hilarious.
That's awesome. That sounds great.
Oh, yeah.
What was it called?
I think it was called Space Cops or something like that, or Star Cops. Okay. I'll have to, I'll send you a picture of what the DVD is. It's but again, one probably in the UK that's been out there for ages. We just hadn't had it out here in Australia yet.
Yeah,
just brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
Yeah,
but I'm glad that in the US you are getting some of the greatest science fiction out there. You've had it in print for years. That is, of course, Douglas Adams, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh yeah,
that's right. And the secret to the universe is 42. It's true. It's 42.
Okay, then. What does that mean?
Well, that, to be honest, you'll be reading all four chapters of that trilogy. That's right. A four-chapter trilogy. Does that make sense? No, it doesn't. But when you read it, you'll find out why. 42 is the number they're given as an answer to the meaning of life. And they are out there to try and find what the question is to that for the whole four books. I mean, it's crazy. Okay. It is. That series should have been Monty Python movies, really.
Yeah.
It really should have.
I have a friend at work that's really into, I think he's read that book at least once.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Oh, it's brilliant. But you haven't seen science fiction or heard science fiction until you've done the BBC radio dramas of Hitchhiker's Guide. They actually started as the radio ones. And you meet these crazy characters, which are literally spoofs of all the other science fiction out there. The main guy is literally a spoof of almost Doctor Who and all these other characters, and all the hangers-on around him are literally spoofs of the characters that are hanging around those sort of science fiction characters. You know,
and
it is just wild, absolutely wild, as you meet these characters. Very much so. Got to check it out. But again, this comes down to, in Australia, we haven't had those properly until iTunes was invented.
Yeah. iTunes? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Where you can actually get these.
iTunes kind of bugs me because, you know, sometimes, like, if I want to get, like the full Star Wars soundtrack, but it only has, like, iTunes, like, kind of edited version. It only has, like, half the songs.
It doesn't have the full list.
No.
No, that's right. I mean, look, you know, iTunes, you're not going to get these classics out there like Capuana, Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Oh, wow.
On LP.
What is Capuana?
It's literally like a theme band, but they do the theme plus their jazzy music behind it. And it's literally, like, this is what they used to do on LP. They would do, like, some of these crazy B-sides, and they'd be like, right, well, here's the Close Encounters of the Third Kind, now we're going to do three songs influenced by it. You know, you can get ones like that. Or, if you're even crazier, you can get the live albums by the Beatles and go, righto, here we go. We've got ourselves your Beatles, and now we're going to do a live double album. That's right, which I picked up for like $3. Or if you
have a Liverpool accent,
nice, eh? And then, or you can go the one they all love, Star Wars Mego, brilliant.
I know that one.
But if you want to go even more spaced out, I've got a couple of really crazy ones. Mego put out these theme ones for Star Trek and Star Wars, and this one in particular is the Star Wars medley, and it is music from the black hole. So, in my best William Shatner, Space, the Final Frontier, check out the songs from Mego.
No, it'd be like, Space, the Final Frontier.
And of course, this is
you got to put a pause in between each word.
You do. This is the best one though. John Williams, the Boston Pops, and it's called.
Oh, I got that on CD.
You got this one on CD. This is brilliant. And yeah. It's how many tracks? About 12 tracks, but this was the first time I'd heard in a sort of more, I suppose, live version, Return of the Jedi, Twilight Zone, 2001.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just amazing stuff. And yesterday, I was still listening to it. I've only listened to the first side or the first album. I picked up American Graffiti, the LP.
Oh, sweet.
You can't find them anywhere. And I found it for like $20. I'm looking at the guy at the record store. I said, This can't be it. I was speechless. I said, this is fake. This can't be it. And he goes, no, that's it. I said, $20? Two tens, like $20. He goes, yeah. And I said, American Graffiti, yeah, is it? And he goes, yeah. He said, yep. I went, wow. The same guy running this place on Southport, Queensland, here in Australia, on the beachside, right down there. You can go down there. You can check out all the Star Wars toys he has. It's a record exchange. You go down there, you give them a record, they give you one, or you can just buy them. And he said, well, mate, if you like those cars in American Graffiti, check out me hot rod. And he opens up. He has a Model T hot rod that he's had for about probably 15 years. It is absolutely beautiful. But again, it just shows the passion for the era.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great soundtrack.
Oh, yeah. Brilliant. Absolutely.
Again, iTunes has like 6 songs off of the soundtrack that you can't play.
Well, they're on the LP.
How much do you want to sell that for?
Well, I think old mate's going to buy it first. He's rocking, man. Rocking. Absolutely rocking. Madness. Absolute madness. But I think music is part of what Star Wars, is. You know, the music, the sound by Ben Burtt, all these different things. Absolutely. I mean, I go back to the NPR radio dramas that were done. I mean, you don't need the visuals of those. It's just such a rich universe.
Those are so great.
Oh, yeah. I think for me, Empire and New Hope were just so well produced as dramas. Yeah, absolutely. Nothing comes close.
No. I mean, I remember listening to those for the first time. And I think even more than the movies, because it made you have to imagine. But I mean, I was Luke. I was Luke. I was fixing my Treadwell droid or whatever.
Yeah.
Dreaming about joining the Imperial Academy. I was like, oh my God, these are so great. I love them.
Oh yeah. No, it's just brilliant.
Yeah.
I love the fact that too, they really got Anchorhead right. You know, they brought that. Anchorhead, when he goes to Anchorhead, and he's meeting, you know, his best friends. I mean, it's like any of us growing up with our teenage buddies going, oh, come on, Skywalker, what are you talking about? Yeah. Oh, ships in the sky, they're stars, man. You know, like, you know,
yeah.
And that's what kids would do. They, you know, they wouldn't believe the stories.
I think he borrowed the macro binoculars from Cammy, and I think she said something like, you know, take it easy or whatever. And Luke was like, said something back, and Fixer was like, hey, man, she said, chill out. You know, so cool.
And I love that it starts off with the ad for the Imperial Academy. Now join us here at the Imperial Academy. And then you can hear in the background Luke going, da 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 da.
I did that. I did the same thing.
You know, and I think that's half of what makes it so much fun. You know, like it's, you know, yeah, it's, makes it so relatable. And I think the last time I listened to those, the NPRs, I had them on my iPhone, and I was just listening to it as I did my daily walk down on the beachside. And it's amazing. You get so into it that you forget where you are. You really do.
I mean, when I was first listening to them, I was like right out of high school and going into college, and I was like, I want to get out of here. I want to go do my own thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think I caught those at like a perfect time, because I was like Luke. I wanted to get off the stinking planet. I wanted to go do my thing. Get me out of here. You know?
Oh, yeah.
I love those things. Those things I'll I'll hold with me for a long time, you know.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, we've got a dear friend of the podcast. His name's Adam Harris of My Saga, and Adam's always said that, you know, as good as the films are, there's something special about those radio dramas. And I think he had the CDs, which were very rare out here. You're very rare to find, you know, those CDs anywhere. But you, the fact that you could put those on and just take your mind off the world completely.
Absolutely. And you get a lot of background, like scenes that got cut from the movie, you know?
That's right.
That, and I remember even like the throne room scene at the end before the they got their medals. And there was a scene with like Han and Luke talking about whatever and before they came out. It was just like so well acted.
Oh, yeah.
So well produced. The music, the sound effects. Ah, man. I'm starting to like it more than the movies.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, the thing is, I mean, what do you do now? Do you, if you, you're going to do a radio dramas now, would you get the actors or would you go and recast it? Would you put Christoph Waltz as Tarkin? I'm telling you, I have this massive space station and you can shoot things with it. It's got the laser beam and it shoots green light.
That'd be perfect.
You know, I mean, the thing is, that's the great thing about those dramas is it wasn't about who played them. It was the voice. It was the voice became the characters. Perry King as Han Solo was just amazing.
Yeah, and he tried out for the role of Han Solo in the movies, too.
That's right. I mean, as many others did. I mean, we had Stallone in there. Stallone, I think, tried a few lines, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, yo, Mickey, I get the Falcon. Yo, yo, yo. And it didn't quite work. You know, you had Al Pacino tried out for it too.
Really?
A lot of people don't know that. Was,
somebody else pretty famous tried out for the role.
Yes, Sean Connery is his name, and he tried out very sharp. But he said, what's his force? What's your force? Midi-chlorians?
Sean Connery.
Midi-chlorians. Is that something you put in your pool with Schultz?
I know, they could just have you do everybody's voice on the radio drama.
Or you could have Arnold turn up, right? That's it. Don't worry about it. I have my biceps. We don't need no force. It's all good. We fly around and we just punch people.
And you know, it's funny, too, is they brought them all back for Return of the Jedi and they all sounded exactly the same.
Well, that's right. I think the only one that didn't come back was Hamill. They had a different Luke.
Yeah. And, yeah, but, like, Anne Sachs and Perry King came back. And I think Anthony Daniels came back.
Yeah, he did, yeah. I think Hammer was starting to do his Broadway career because he was starting to do Amadeus or something like that, you know. I remember seeing Amadeus, you know, whatever it was that they were doing, you know. And, you know, he basically tried to get into that movie, but he didn't get cast in it.
Yeah. Do you remember that show? I think it was Ellen back in the 90s, Ellen Generous. Yep. I think there was a guy on her show that did the voice for either Luke or Lando.
Oh, that's remember. Right. Yeah. I think so. I think it was
the Luke one. Ari Gross, something like that.
Yeah. All I remember about the Ellen show is Dennis Quaid walking into the coffee shop. He goes, "Dennis Quaid wants water."
Okay.
You'll have to look that up on YouTube. He's got an earpiece in his ear. Let's cut out for a sec. All right, there we are. Now we're recording again. Yeah, so it's just absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
You know?
That's good stuff.
Now, before we wrap up, I want to let you tell the listeners where they can find some of the writing you've been doing now, because obviously you've got a new platform. Where can they find all the great work you're doing in fandom?
So I just started writing for RetroZap.com. I think, I don't know, a few weeks ago. I've already pumped out like six articles.
Oh, wow.
I think I count them, six or seven. Brilliant. One just posted today. I'm doing reviews of Star Wars Resistance.
Excellent.
So.
Alrighty. That was a great little chat with, of course, Eric Onkenhout. And go and check out his work on the new platform he's on, which is, of course, RetroZap.com. A great source for many great shows and blogs, and of course goes from everything from Star Wars to Dune, and of course a lot of different podcasts covering all different
fandoms. So go and check it out. And next episode of the show, we're going to have Mark Herleman from Star Wars Beyond the Films, and of course the Star Wars Report, who is a dear friend of the show and a dear friend of Fantha Tracks. And we're going to be chatting about the state of Star Wars and what he loves about the franchise as a whole, and what are we looking forward to. The Mandalorian, Episode 9, all these different facets of the Star Wars universe. I can't wait for it. So, before we go, I want to say big thanks to Eric and a big thanks to you, the listeners, for checking out the show and, of course, supporting Fantha Tracks. Go to FanthaTracks.com, go and check it out. And I'm just going to leave you with a little bit of info where you can get the show and, of course, where you can find Making Tracks and all the other amazing Fantha Tracks work out there. Now, here's where you can find Fantha Tracks on the web. You can find the website Fantha Tracks itself at FanthaTracks.com for all your Star Wars news in a single file. You can also catch the flagship show, Making Tracks, hosted by both Mark Newbold and, of course, Dave Tree, on Fantha Tracks Radio, on SoundCloud, iTunes, and, of course, anywhere where good podcasts can be found. You'll be able to find Down Under and Making Tracks also at Spotify now. And be sure to check it out there as well, as you'll find all of our shows now on that platform too. Be sure to check out the YouTube channel of Fantha Tracks as well for all the Star Wars news, reviews, and of course, you'll find the team from all over the world going to events, and you'll see video from those all on the YouTube channel. So go and check it out. Fantha Tracks, all your Star Wars news in a single file.